Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, we're joined by Andrew and James Baumgartner, brothers and second generation leaders of the Baumgartner Group, a dynamic organization built on nearly 40 years of family entrepreneurship. The story begins with their parents, both successful contractors in the booming Atlantic City construction scene of the 1980s. Their mother founded Guthrie Glass, named after her maiden name, and built a reputation for craftsmanship and grit, while their father ran his own general contracting firm. What started out as two family businesses has now evolved into a growing portfolio of trade companies under the Baumgartner Group umbrella, spanning glass, masonry, flooring, tile, and even disaster recovery. Together, Andrew and James are redefining what it means to truly run a family enterprise, honoring their parents' work ethic while building a modern, diversified, and relation-driven construction group for the next generation. Andrew, James, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We're glad to be here and excited to share a little bit of our story and looking forward to having this discussion for a little while now.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Very interesting backstory, as we alluded to. But Andrew, let's start with you. Speaking of that rich backstory, take us back to the beginning. What was it like growing up around two parents and they both ran their own businesses?
It was great. My parents were always present. And now that I'm a father, I'm understanding how difficult that must have been for them. And they prioritized family. And I appreciated it then. I appreciate it even more now. But they were always at our games and events and would be working later in the evenings after the kids went down. But they found a way. We've talked about being entrepreneurs, and I'd say it's more hours, but it's more flexible hours. Your mind's always on it, but you can still be somewhere for your kids or your family. And parents certainly did that. So that was appreciated. And then the other side of that is just growing up around two parents that are in the same business, in the same industry, and conversations that they were having at the dinner table on the way to football games or way home from soccer practice. There was a lot of business conversations that we were around, and they did a great job at involving us in those conversations. And we got a firsthand seat to a really good experience of just understand the terminology and how businesses work. And so it was great. It was great having two awesome parents that are from the business.
Yeah. And just to that point about the dinner table conversations, that's something that, you know, I think growing up, we took for granted or didn't realize that it was maybe unique. I think we got a lot of our business acumen just through osmosis of our parents and the things that they would talk about. And looking back now, I can appreciate the types of things, the types of questions, the types of stories, work stories they would tell, the types of questions they would ask us, pick our brains as kids, is how we would handle certain situations that they dealt with on a day-to-day basis and show how they dealt with it. It's definitely unique. We appreciate that now, but growing up, it was just a part of the everyday conversations we had, but that definitely helped us in our business acumen.
It's something that's a recurring theme in the show. And I think it's something that is easily missed or overlooked, especially if you're not a multi-gen, which is how much you learn without realizing it just through observation. In your case, two parents both running a business, that's what you knew. It wouldn't occur to you that, hey, that's a pretty big deal. That's hard. Run a family and each be running a business independently is not an easy task. And to their credit, to your credit, they were able to juggle. And to your point, Andrew, to find the windows of time that they needed to make it count for family, but then also back to business, maybe off hours or early morning or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's five of us kids. They had a lot to juggle between business and family. And yeah, I don't know how they did it. I've got two kids now and one on the way, and it's a struggle.
Yeah.
God bless them. They figured it out. They did great.
I'm going to ask James about your mom founding Guthrie Glass. I think it was in 1986.
Yep.
And if we go back to 1986, that's a time where, you know, the idea of women in construction, that was still, you know, breaking barriers, I would say, in 1986. And she was founding this company. So talk about your mom for a minute. What was she like and what is she like? And maybe a little bit of, there has to be a lot of drive and toughness in her DNA. So if you could speak to that for a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what came to mind. First word that came to mind was tough. So yeah, my mom's grew up one of five kids of her own. She's got four siblings. There's two girls in there. They grew up in rural Indiana, and both of her parents were school teachers. And so in the summers, that her father would build a house or two with his kids, again, two of which are female. And so he didn't discriminate on who was helping out. So they grew up every summer once they got to, you know, a certain age where they'd help out, help building homes to supplement the two teacher income. She grew up from a young kid around construction, and her whole family on that side is full of entrepreneurs. And most of them are in things like construction, landscaping, other sort of dirty work, quote unquote, jobs. And so she really, it's really in her DNA that she's going to do whatever she's got to do. And she doesn't view herself as, you know, the woman in construction thing, there were barriers, but she never made excuses on that. She wanted to be respected for the work that she did. She wasn't,
I don't know that she's ever even acknowledged them. I'm aware of them and people have become more aware of them. But to her, she just said, if I've got the best product and the best price, then they don't have any other choice but to hire the best service. And that's what she prided herself on. And yeah, never really recognized the fact that, oh, this isn't an industry full of women. And I'm one of the very few people that's out here doing what I'm doing. But she certainly blazed the trail and has done a great job at just doing exactly what she said, not giving people the opportunity to not hire her.
Yeah.
Sounds like she held herself to a high standard.
High standard. Absolutely. And back in that day, things have gotten more stringent now, I suppose. Back in that day, to be a woman-owned business, a lot of husbands would put it in their construction business in their wives' names in order to get participation or favorable bids from cities or whatever. And so she had to deal with that. Certainly people assumed, oh, where's your husband? People assumed that she wasn't the one running the show, but she certainly was. And people quickly realized that when she would go to job meetings and she could run circles around them a lot of times. She definitely dealt with some of that stuff, never complained about it though. And yeah, and just seeing that, her kids seeing that, us seeing that, and her employees seeing that have really adopted that kind of that work ethic and that attitude that nothing's given to you, no obstacles are going to stop you. Yeah, we owe a lot to our mom.
Yeah, she just didn't, at the house, she would always talk about her father wouldn't let him use the word can't. What do you mean you can't do it? So she, that was one of her rules in the house. She was a strict woman, so there was a lot of rules. we had no cursing, no drinking, no, we were held to a high standard. And
we didn't always meet that standard.
I did. James, on the other hand.
Boys will be boys, right? It's our job to get into trouble when we're young.
Yeah, for sure. Things. Well, we did that job well. But that was just the way, that's her mindset. Can't is not in her vocabulary. And if you work hard, you have every opportunity to succeed. And so that was a great role model for us, has been. So,
and by contrast, interestingly, and Andrew, you and I had a chance to talk a little before this interview, and we spoke about your dad. Bit of a different style, as I understand it, whereas your mom was a bit more of a direct persona and a bit more hard charging. Your dad was, I think you defined him as a bit more relationship driven. Talk about your dad for a moment and how his style is different and maybe even how his style was influential in how you guys govern the Baumgartner Group today.
Yeah, so my dad was a general contractor, like you had mentioned, and he's a decent sized outfit, one of the mid to larger size in Atlantic City, but he was always a relationship based with clients, but internally as well, and was not where I would consider my mom a trade specialist. She knows every ounce of the glazing business from start to finish. My dad is more of a generalist, and he likes surrounding himself with those expert type people, and he wants to manage them and build a team. And then also, like I said, from the client side and having a good relationship and being on job sites and making sure that the people that he's working for know that he's available and has a relationship with them. But two very different management styles. As far as how it relates to us now, I'd like to say I'm the best of both worlds, but the reality of it is I'm still learning myself, and I've been doing this for over 10 years now, working with the family, and I'm still learning and growing. But I try to take slivers of things that each of them do that I've seen be successful. But the reality of it is that everybody has their own management and their own success style. I worked with a gentleman in New York who was a great leader and just but had his style. And that was for me in the disaster recovery and through my parents and seeing all these different leaders that had their businesses, and everybody was very different. And at first I thought, I want to be like this person. I want to be like this person. And what you really have to do is figure out who you are and then lean into that and have your own style. My parents have done their things and they were super successful. And James and I are still figuring ourselves out, but we're building on that every day.
It would sound like it's given you a bit more of a broader perspective. Whereas for me as a second gen, it was just my dad. So my model, my initial model of leadership was my father, and not always the best model.
Yeah.
Much like your dad, a master of relationships, but maybe one would say not so tempered when it came to dealing with personnel. He was he was an old naval officer. Let's put it that way. So you can imagine how that translated. But so that was my perspective. Whereas you have a broader perspective because you have two parents, both happen to have run their own businesses successfully. And it sounds like both doing so with much different styles. So you have a bit more of a broader view on that because it's not just one way. It's, hey, there's a multitude of ways that you can lead. So
yeah. And I think that their styles also fit their companies. As a general contractor, it's in the word general, you don't necessarily have to be a trade specialist and know everything in and out like my mom did as a subcontractor. If a general contractor's hiring her for glass, they want to know she knows glass, versus client hiring a general contractor, they're wanting to know that you can manage the job well. So their personalities, I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg. I don't know if their personalities fit that or if they molded their personalities to the industry they're in, but they both seem to do it successfully.
Understood. So now let's get to you guys. So at some point, all of us that are multi-gens are at a crossroads, right? We can get involved in the family business or we can go our own way. So let's start with you, James. What was it in you that kind of said, let's do this? I want to be involved.
Yeah, sure. I didn't know what exactly my career path was going to be. I started off at Deloitte in San Diego, actually, as a tax accountant. I'm a CPA by trade. And that was a great opportunity, a great experience, but I knew that wasn't going to be my career. Just growing up in a family of entrepreneurs and, and construction entrepreneurs at that, I figured I'd always work for myself one day with my brothers and sisters someday, potentially. So it was always in the back of my mind that I would be doing something like this. But it wasn't until Andrew was the patriarch of it, I suppose, of this next generation. He was the first one to get involved. And he was in my ear a little bit about, hey, we could use you. There were a couple of key people retiring. My mom at the time was not looking to, we hadn't at that point expressed interest in taking over the business. And so she wasn't necessarily backfilling positions. She was going to retire with other employees that were around the same age as her, and they were going to ride off in the sunset and close it down. And then Andrew had gotten involved and saw things were viable, thought it was something he wanted to do. And so Andrew was, when I was out working for Deloitte, Andrew, we keep in touch all the time, obviously. And he was putting it in my head that, hey, if and when you're ready, we could use you. And then finally, the timing worked out to where there was some turnover. There were some people retiring to where there was a need for me, and just said, hey, this is what I've always imagined doing something like this. So let's go. Yeah. And Andrew nudged me. I'm glad he did. But that was really it.
And did you find that you were able to bring some of that knowledge back, James, from your experiences with Deloitte?
Yeah. So as a tax accountant, CPA, the hard skills don't necessarily come back with me. I'm not preparing tax returns anymore, talking with clients about how to utilize tax laws to their benefit and stuff like that, of course, but more soft skills than anything. I had a great experience. Everyone around me was really sharp. It's a pretty prestigious firm with some smart folks there. And so everyone really, it really makes you bring your A game to work every day. So yeah, I brought back some things with me, mostly around culture is a big one. We had a really good culture in that office and everyone from happy hours to Hawaiian shirt Fridays, or it's Friday now, flannel Fridays in the off season and in the winter time. I brought back more soft skills than I did anything, which I'm very thankful for. How to lead a team. I started off obviously not leading anybody. And then by the time I left, I had a team of dozen or so people, mm-hmm. give or take, on the engagement that would be working with me. And so really how to manage people, how to build a culture. I stole a lot of imitation is the greatest form of flattery. I stole some of the things, like I said, Hawaiian shirt Fridays or flannel Fridays and bagel Fridays. We do some barbecues, happy hours. So really how to build that culture. Because at the end of the day, any company's biggest asset is going to be your people. And I was friends with my coworkers out there, and I saw how much that made me want to work. It made me want to work harder for folks mm-hmm. that I am friendly with, and just really bringing that back with me was the biggest thing I'd say. So I'm very grateful for my time there.
And it's always that was something that I always wished I had the opportunity. My situation was a little different in that my father and I had the heart to heart after college. I had a giant job lined up outside of Philadelphia. And we had this talk, and he said, come into the business. You can buy me out. I'll teach you the things you don't know, but decide this weekend, or because I've got some people lined up to buy it. And he did. Wow. He actually had 3 or 4 suitors to potentially buy it. So it was kind of like, okay, I have to decide over a weekend.
Yeah.
But in the look back, I think it just enriches the experience, like yourself, James, to be able to go out and then bring, even if they are soft skills, so what? There's still value that you're bringing back to the organization, and that whole different perspective and that whole different world, that corporate culture, you know, a bigger environment, all of that knowledge, just observation when you were young. It's the same observation skills that are coming home.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I'm grateful to our parents never forced us or never told us. Growing up, we worked in the warehouse and stuff for our parents, but they never pushed us towards any sort of career path. And it worked out well to where, you know, we've got, at this point, we've got different strengths where I went and studied accounting, got my CPA. Andrew went basically right into construction. And then our other brother, Christian, has a mix of the two. He's an economics major at University of Virginia. And so it worked out well, knock on wood. So far, it's working, but we all got our own. There's a nice little Venn diagram of our skills, and it plays well together, and it just so happened to work that way. So I'm grateful for my experience and what I'm able to bring to the table, for sure.
Nice. So Andrew, let's pick on you for a little bit here.
Yeah,
First in, and it sounds like you knew fairly early on that this was the path, or did you? Or let's talk about when you were at that cross. When did you first start to say, hey, this is what I think I want to do. I want to get involved in the family business, and I've got a vision for how that can happen.
Unfortunately, I'm somebody that learns the hard way. And so I went out and I started in the disaster recovery business, and it was not with my mom. My dad was partially involved, but he was also partially retired at that point, and learned a lot of lessons in the fire with a very high intensity, fast paced business. And I was learning on the run, and there was a lot to learn in a short period of time. But after doing a bunch of work in New Jersey and in New York, I met my girlfriend at the time, but is now my wife, and saw that family was going to be in the cards shortly. And the disaster recovery business is a traveling one. You've got to go where the work is, and was weighing my options of what do I do now? Like I said, I had gone through, learned a lot along the way. And I don't know how intentional it was at the time to start working with my mom, but she was at the cusp of closing the business down. She had attempted to sell it. She had gotten an evaluation done, and they basically said, look, Lynn, you've got an aging workforce here. It's really the businesses. You have the relationships, you have the knowledge, and there wasn't a ton of value there, market value for it. And I came in because she needed help. And she was down to, I think it was her last PM, Katie, who's still with us, thankfully. And it was her and Katie, and they had some work. And so I jumped in to help out. And it wasn't very long before I said, hey, I remember recognizing how impressed I was with my mom and what she's been able to accomplish and build and the reputation that she has. And that was an attractive thing to say, hey, we can keep this legacy going. And it was not long after. I might have spent a year there before James decided to come back and join, but it was really the attraction to it was just seeing what my mother was able to accomplish and build, and why not keep it going.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't know if you guys felt this way, but I certainly did. It's hard to see it go. It becomes whether it should or not. And a lot of people have told me, you know, that I really need to learn to create some emotional separation between myself and my business. After 30 years, I can honestly say I haven't quite figured that out.
Yeah.
But
Well, yeah, I
it's
mean,
hard.
yeah, to that point, you spend more time oftentimes with your coworkers than you do your family. So it's one of, if not the biggest pieces of your life. And especially if you're the one, at the helm, it's, yeah, I'm 6 years in and I already feel that connection. And it's hard to, this is the single biggest thing I think about on a daily basis. I don't have a family yet, but I'm sure that'll change. But yeah, it's hard to separate for sure.
Absolutely. So I want to definitely touch on something because I think this is really interesting what you're doing as part of now the Baumgartner Group, which is essentially what was Guthrie Glass is now part of Baumgartner Group, along with several other entities, and essentially identifying maybe businesses that have some great people but are predominantly owner-dependent organizations or small organizations that much to your mom's experience, may have limited resale value once they're valued. It sounds like you guys are building a knack for identifying those businesses and bringing them under the Baumgartner Group. Can you talk about a little bit about how that model came together and that approach? Andrew, maybe we could start with you.
Yeah, sure. It came about somewhat organically. It wasn't a light bulb that necessarily went off. It was just seeing the experiences that my father had with his small business that did well on a year-to-year basis, that had long-standing clients and relationships. And when he went to sell it, same type of thing. Hey, George, this business, you are the business is you, and there's really not a whole lot of market value. And so he ultimately ended up closing his business down when he got to retirement age. He's always dabbled in real estate, so that's kept him busy. But we've seen that time and time again. There's a couple companies that come to the top of mind that just didn't have kids in the business, and there's not a ton of resale value, and the owners got tired of taking the risk on putting it all out there and their time and efforts. After seeing that with my father, seeing the direction that my mother was headed with her business. And then we also had an aunt and uncle in the flooring and tile business. And so first with my mother, me working there, my aunt and uncle, he came to us and said, "Hey, are you guys looking to do something similar here with our business? Because we're going to be wrapping this thing up here right around the COVID era." And so we were able to work out a deal with them and keep all their employees working, which was important for them and important to us. Keep servicing the clients that they've serviced for 30 years and introduce that service to clients that Guthrie had that my aunt and uncle hadn't. BFC was the name of their business. So again, just an organic thing that had happened.
I'd almost say organic, certainly. I'd almost say, are you accidental as well? But we didn't have this plan per se prior to having the conversation with our aunt and uncle, who Andrew mentioned. COVID, it was a good time for them. My Uncle John and my Aunt Bernadette, they spent a ton of time in Florida, and things were slow with COVID, and it was a good time for them to exit the business. And so we said, all right, let's see what we could do. Like Andrew said, it gave them peace of mind that their employees, right? You got people that you're providing a living for, and it's hard to, how are you going to shut down a business and people go looking for jobs? We saw we put a business model together and were able to make something happen, but that went well. And then we stumbled upon this business model a little bit.
And from there it was okay, this worked well. After a year of doing that, we said, is there something here? Is there an opportunity for us with the baby boomer generation that's coming to that retirement age, and there's not a ton of new blood going into the construction industry? That's a big problem that's been happening with construction. And is there something here? And we've slowly but surely continued to add on services and work with companies that are in the similar predicament and situation that a few of my family members have been in.
But again, once again, by virtue of observation and I'd say influence, I think it's made you all inherently entrepreneurial because let's face it, you're both your parents were, as were your aunt and uncle apparently.
Yeah,
So
no doubt.
by virtue of being that way, entrepreneurs are naturally curious and they
Yeah.
wonder, I wonder how we could fix this problem. And along comes the Baumgartner Group, which essentially is just that. If you have
Yeah.
the problem of not being in a position to exit because you're owner dependent or have a very small team, and you fit a certain model, we'd love to talk to you. Maybe not all, but some.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversations that happen that don't go anywhere. And that's why with us, we're not out there backed by private equity that has a mandate to grow by X percent. For us, it's what makes sense and what fits in.
Yeah, and how to service really with how to service our existing clients best, right? We same general contractors we work for on glass. We started doing flooring and tile and countertops, and then we added masonry to it. So we're really trying to, our value proposition is to our clients saying, hey, you're dealing with, as a general contractor, you're managing dozens of scopes, dozens of subcontractors at a time. So if we can package three, four, five different things, you're dealing with one person or one group of people. That's where we're hoping, that's where we have been able to get our message across to clients. Yeah.
I would have to think even on individualized projects or engagements, there's probably a healthy cross-sell too. Whereas not only rolling up to the GCs, but also somebody that's working in the glass has a flooring or tile need. Okay, you've got a resource for that. So there's a cross-sell opportunity as well. That being said, so now that you've started to roll up a few companies now under the Baumgartner Group, if you could share for a minute, what do you look for? What looks like, hey, that's a good acquisition opportunity? And maybe on the backside, what do you stay away from?
I'd say one of the first things is somebody's got to have a great reputation. They've got to be known as somebody who's a straight shooter and has a long history of relationships and being successful on projects and being a real partner to our clients. And even if it's not our clients, their clients. But we look for people. We're a union company. We're based out of South Jersey. A lot of our work's in Philadelphia and South Jersey. Being a union company is an important part of it. And ideally, they've got a decent sized staff that is also going to be sticking around. When I first got into business, I'll speak for myself, I underestimated the importance of people. And it was a short period after being in business, I realized that's everything. Everything that we do is people dependent, and it goes to our reputation, our success on projects, profitability. It's all really just, do you have the right people in the right seats? And are they competent and representing you well? So if we can find a company that has those few things, we're open to a conversation. And then I'd say one of the last pieces of it, the owner's got to be realistic. If somebody's thinks that their business, and a lot of people do have grandiose valuations in their head of how much money they make, and they multiply it by some, at the end of the day, there's not a huge barrier of entry in these businesses. And we've had an acquisition where you buy it, all of a sudden a key employee goes and he starts his own thing for very little. And so what did we buy? So it's really asset-based valuations. Mm-hmm. And if somebody can get, and I've said this to plenty of owners previously, if you can get more money, that's what I want you to do. I don't want anybody to feel like they are doing us a favor, I want everyone to maximize their value with their business. And so we encourage people, if you can go out on the free market, I don't want it this just to be a one party negotiation. I want you to get other offers. And so you can see what the real value of your business is. And if I can't offer you the most or the most attractive, because somebody might offer more, but not hit some of the metrics that are important to them. And so that's having a realistic owner value is important as well.
And that's especially when it is a closely held business or a privately held business. There's a lot of emotional equity tied up in that business too. And sometimes it's hard to separate. And even when you see a valuation, that's a number. Really, the valuation is what the street will do.
Yeah.
Somebody will actually pay for the enterprise and the assets of the enterprise, which may not always be that number that an accountant worked up on a page.
Yeah, especially in this business, we have to bid every job, right? So it's not like we're signing a five-year contract where you get X dollars per year doing something. So if we're buying a business and the owner is leaving and, okay, we got no backlog now, you're the one who's been estimating all these jobs and landing these jobs one by one, and now you're out the door. Unfortunately, as my mom was seeing in her valuations when she was looking to do a similar thing, it's the nature of the business we're in. It's a bid. You got to land every job and not sign a long-term contract. So there's, unfortunately, not much inherent value in the business.
Yeah. So now under Baumgartner, just so I understand, is there an effort underway then to more or less centralize systems? So for all of the companies under that portfolio, are they working with kind of a common back office where you're maybe starting to bring some of that operational continuity, albeit they're all different forms of trades, but nonetheless, they still have invoicing, they still have HR, they still have all of the back office functions. Is that happening now or has that already happened?
Yeah, absolutely. It's already happened. We're constantly revising the way we do things. We've got no ego about us when it comes to improving the way things are, but we do have something set up that's me and my team. I view myself as a CPA, as an accountant. I'm very detail-oriented. I'm very process-oriented. So I view me and my team as, hey, we're a construction company. We are here to support our field operations. At the end of the day, nobody's paying us to do paperwork. They're paying us to build buildings. The things we have centralized are, we've got Everyone's under one roof here, and we share a warehouse and vehicles. So there's deliveries that are, if we're on the same job site or a close job site across glass and masonry, let's say, we schedule deliveries with that in mind. We have on my end, on the accounting side of things, for example, it wouldn't make sense to have each company has its own payroll person. Each company has its own payroll. So we centralize those things where we've got one payroll specialist who does payroll for the different divisions, one accounts receivable person who does AR across the board. So like you mentioned, each trade, you're not going to have someone that is a specialist in glass that can also do a masonry takeoff, a masonry estimate. That's just not, if you can find someone that does that, then that person's incredible. But yeah, exactly. Unicorns. When it comes to the specific trade stuff, that being said, they all communicate daily with one another. Just we're all in the same building, so everyone's friends with one another, friendly with one another. And certainly our superintendents on the job sites will coordinate the trades more closely than an independent company would. But the estimating and project managing is pretty separate, again, because it's very trade specific. But all of the, we try to do our purchase orders and our accounts receivable and our processes, we try our best to streamline those and make them consistent across the board. And then again, the specific insurance person, there's one person that deals with that. There's one person that deals with all these things. It's just create a little bit of economies of scale that way.
Nice, nice. And then it would seem that the individual entities still go to market as their current trade name. They've not rolled up into Baumgartner, or is there a plan in place to ultimately roll them up into one?
It's something we're exploring now, Ed. We had originally struggled to get that message out there that Guthrie and BFC and Bumware Masonry are all, and then Palermo Masonry, these are all under the same. And so that was the origination of the bomb. We had started to make that tagline, so that way people could see the relationship there. We've explained it and sent out newsletters. It's still something that we might have that conversation once a month with clients that we've been working for years that, oh, I didn't realize. But more recently, Ed, we brought a gentleman on who has a long history of construction experience, and he was a VP of one of the Philadelphia companies for 20 plus years and has got relationships all over South Jersey and Philadelphia. And he's been part-time in his retirement, just helping put that message out there and set up introductions and dinners and lunches so that people, we could explain it in person, as well as some of our marketing material, our signatures and our emails. It now will say the Baumgartner Group, and then beneath that, it's got each of the entities listed, but it's a constant effort. But each of the companies operates under the Baumgartner Group as their own entity. Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. And as that evolves, I can think of at least one firm that might be able to help you a little bit. But putting that aside, there's another question, because we've not talked much about Christian, your other brother in the business. And so there's three of you. This is always something that comes up a lot in this program. So you've got three brothers. When conflict, or when there's not a seeing of alignment on an issue, how do you guys work through that? If you're not on the same page on an issue, or if an issue comes up and there's different opinions, how do the three of you work through some of the issues that you don't always align so well?
Yeah.
Take that one, James.
Yeah, sure. To be honest with you, we're very fortunate. We grew up in like Andrew mentioned earlier, there's five of us and three of us in the business together, but we're all very close in friendship. We're all very close in age. When Christian's the youngest, and when he was born, our older brother, Ted, the oldest, was six. So there are five kids between a newborn and 6 years old. We grew up together, playing sports together, playing video games together, picking on our sister together at times. But we've had a very close relationship our entire lives. So that background really helps. And we've had, I can count on one hand probably, the amount of times we've had disagreements that have gotten a little bigger than they should have. But even then, we were able to, within almost immediately, put that behind us. We value family more than anything, more than business. Mm-hmm. So we don't want business to get in the way of family. And we talk about it constantly. We have retreats at times. Once or twice a year, we'll go away and just talk things at a high view and try to keep things in perspective. And so we're very aware of how business and second, third generations and how many businesses fail because of things like that. And we don't want to see it strain our relationships. We're very fortunate that we communicate well. We think similarly, for better or worse, most of the times for better, I think. But just, Yeah, we've
pretty, been pretty easygoing, egoless.
Sure.
It doesn't really, no one's concerned about whether their opinion gets more attention. It's about whatever the best opinion is, the best options are.
And look, and usually the better, if there's three of us, two are on one side and the other, the two are good. Better ideas and usually come out on top. At least in retrospect, it seems that way, that, hey, we made the right decision here after talking it through. We've been lucky in how our parents raised us, honestly, and how close we are. And we for example, the four boys growing up until we went to college, we all shared a room, the four of us. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a lot of no TV in our room.
Two bunk beds, yeah, that were 5 foot across from each other.
So I owe a lot of the success, the relational success to how we were raised.
And my mother says that if we let business get in the way of our relationship, she's going to come back and haunt us from her when she dies. She said that's honestly, it's her biggest fear in bringing us into the business was that it would tear us apart. She's seen it happen so many times, and that was something she will bring up frequently. She's always saying how important it is that we have a open, honest relationship and can have tough conversations. Fortunately, like James said, we haven't had to have too many, so that's been good.
That's great. And it would sound like not just a close family in name, literally a close family. You were all in the same room growing up, which would imply that also knowing when and how to compromise was also in your DNA, because not everyone can have exactly what they want. There's other siblings, and you got to learn to share.
Yeah,
no doubt. That might be sharing of toys when you're little, but it translates now into older. Maybe the sharing of ideas, sharing of perspectives, and being respectful of the fact that, hey, I'm not the only one with a viewpoint. There's a few others here and I got to listen.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's served you well. You're also, and Andrew, I'll ask you about this. I guess if we were to chart back to the origins of what's now Baumgartner Group, it would go back to, I guess, 86, which would imply that 2026 is a milestone. You're hitting 40 years, essentially. What, just talk about that. As you look ahead, you look back, what does that mean for you? Is that special? What does that mean that you're hitting this milestone next year?
Yeah, it is. It's very personal, obviously. And we wouldn't have reached the milestone if it wasn't for Lynn putting in the first 35 years. And we wouldn't have reached it if it wasn't for us putting in the last 5 years. So she deserves more of the credit than we do. Certainly, she's carried the torch for a lot longer. And we recognize that. And, you know, in our industry, it's a transient industry. It's a very risk heavy, specifically in construction. And you see frequently companies that are around for 10 years or 15 years, or some cases have been around for 50 years and they're not there anyway. It's just the risk reward. We question ourselves all the time about the industry we're in, but construction's a thin margin. You got to be on top of your stuff and you've got to do it every day. And I think that's the most impressive thing to me, particularly with what my mother and the effort she's put in. But you don't necessarily, because it's a contract-based business, you don't make it one day and, okay, now I've got all these people. No, every day you've got to come in and it builds and builds and builds. And you're constantly putting your nose to the grindstone. And that's what she's done. And that's been our role model. And so that's what we've been doing. But yeah, 40 years, it's incredible. It's impressive. And she did it with class and she did it with integrity. And so we're very proud of her and to some extent ourselves. But yeah, it's an impressive feat for her.
It absolutely is. So now let's take a moment, James, and look to the future. As you look out to the horizon, you're coming into the 40th year and then beyond. What's something that's really exciting you about where the company is now or where the industry is going?
Sure. Yeah. I'm, like I mentioned, I could talk construction to the layperson, but I am not a construction specialist by any means. I'm a CPA and I know my role in that in the company. And what I'm most excited about and most proud of is the ability to provide a living for a lot of people. We take that very seriously. If we can, let's say there's 200 people that rely on our leadership to put food on their family's table. That's what drives me. If I fail on my own, it's one thing. I'm not worried about myself. But if I fail for 200 people that rely on us, that's another thing. So what excites me most about the future isn't the construction as much as it is the ability to impact our communities. If we can be, you know, if we could take what our parents have built and grow that and be a pillar in the business community, in our local communities, and just be good role models and provide a living for more and more people and a good place to work with a good culture. We both said it before, but it's all about the people you have. And we wouldn't be here without the countless employees over the years that have contributed to the success. Yeah. Well, like I said, what excites me most is just the ability to hopefully positively impact our employees, our clients. If we can build a job on time, under budget, That's where I find my fulfillment is in serving others, and take that very personally and very seriously.
Awesome. Awesome. Said. So last question, Andrew, if somebody listening wanted to learn more about you guys or more about what you have going on at the Baumgartner Group, what's the best way for them to connect?
You can send me an email at andrew@guthrieglass.com, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, glass. My cell phone number is 609-287-2707, but I'm here for any, whether it's you're looking for services that we provide or collaboration on business projects, we're always open and love talking to different people. We also have a website and a LinkedIn. If you wanted to look up the Baumgartner Group, you can find us, should be able to find us pretty easily. But yeah, that's my cell phone number. And James, you?
Yeah, my cell is 609-287-1280. So same thing. We're available. We love having conversations. So.
And for any of our listeners that are maybe nearing that point of looking to for an exit and happen to be in one of the trades, perhaps a conversation would be in order there too. Would you say, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. Andrew, James, this has been great. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for really your honesty, your passion comes through and through. And it's clear that you're looking to evolve the business, but also very much staying true to your roots every step of the way. And your story is really a masterclass for our listeners in what it means to be family, what it means to transition, and what it means to grow. And ultimately, you're charting the path for that next generation of successful business leaders in the trades. Again, we've been speaking with Andrew and James Baumgartner of the Baumgartner Group. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. James, Andrew, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it. It's been great.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.